I'm David Garland. This is Spinning on Air, and I have for you today winding ribbons of melody that you're going to hear winding around rich, unpredictable harmonies colored by an array of instruments, all played by two people who are here to share their music with us. They are the ghosts of a saber-toothed tiger, perhaps an unfamiliar name to many listeners, but the people themselves you may know. Sean Lennon is here playing the guitar and singing, and he co-writes the songs with Charlotte Kemp Moule, who is playing accordion and singing and more. We're going to enter into their beautiful, lyrical, colorful musical world here on Spinning on Air. Thank you for coming, Ghost of a Saber-Toothed Tiger.
Thank you for that lovely intro. That was beautiful. And we'll wind. We shall start our winding.
It's a long and winding.
The winding shall begin. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. A 1, 2, 3, 4.
Though you can't intimidate the tree, snowman sweating in a terrible breeze, put on your new pants and move out to France. All the skeletons in your closet rummaging through your clothes, looking through your shoeboxes and pockets. The wrappers ain't on the nose. People say your brain is like cream cheese, takes the shape of anything you please. The dust from the trails under your fingernails, the leaves in the Luxembourg garden showing their true colors. They're blushing, they're begging your pardon, 'cause time's a jealous lover. I recall first time that you passed me by,
and I saw
my demise in your stainless eyes. The dust from the trails under your fingernails, showing their true colors. They're blushing, they're begging your pardon, 'cause time's a jealous lover. Canary singing through the calico tea, everything's exactly what it
Jardin du Luxembourg is the title of that piece, performed by the ghost of a saber-toothed tiger, Sean Lennon and Charlotte Kemp Moule. Thank you for these lovely songs. I really enjoy being in the musical world that you guys have made together. And this is a collaborative project, I understand.
Yeah, it is a very collaborative project. In fact, that's the most exciting thing about it for me personally, because I used to be mostly a solo artist, and writing songs alone was lonely. And I was always writing about my own feelings and stuff. And then I met Charlotte and we started a band together, and it enabled me to sort of open up my mind creatively and not just try to express my views, but actually create songs together with someone. And it's been really fun.
Well, it's been interesting for me to go back to your earlier albums, Sean, Into the Sun and Friendly Fire. The first one came out way back in 1998. I like those albums, and I enjoy the kind of songwriting that you create, which is really full of harmonic exploration, nice textures of sound and all this.
Thank you.
And I really like those albums on their own. as your work.
Thanks.
But then I feel like with this band, maybe something's coming into focus. Do you feel that that's the case?
Well, a lot is happening. I mean, this point in our lives happens to be a convergence of a lot of things, and we've started our own label, Chimera Music, and we're sort of creatively expanding our horizons.
Starting this label and this band has been sort of like killing our first buffalo and becoming adults finally. And, you know, we're literally sounding boards for each other. So writing music together is really, really incredible. It's like making love in a circuitous way.
Well, the music didn't make me think of dead buffaloes, but it did make me think that you've been in a direction with your songwriting, Sean, and now you're closer.
Thank you. I appreciate you seeing that because I feel that way. You know, it was difficult for me in a way when I was young because where I was at as a songwriter and where the world was at in terms of being ready to, I don't know, get me or understand me, we're not necessarily in sync. And I think finally now that I have, you know, met Charlotte and have a partner, it's really helped open the door to a whole new creative kind of acumen for me personally. And I'm sure we both feel that way. It's kind of like it just helps to have teamwork going on, I think. And at the same time, it probably coincides with me being older and knowing what I want more. So
I think Sean's always been, you know, really evolved musically, but I definitely like to push him lyrically. So I think he's really starting to peak in both those departments.
We definitely have a tennis match going on. And it's kind of funny because a lot, you say that our music is windy and kind of circuitous, which is obviously true. But it's funny, actually, that a lot of times we'll sit down and say, okay, this time we're not going to do a windy song. We're going to really write a pop song. And by the end of it, it winds up being this incredibly kind of lengthy epic thing. And I think it's because, you know, I'll come up with a chord and she'll be like, well, then how about this chord? Then I'm hitting it back and forth. And we just keep adding chords and parts and words and ideas. And it's actually really, it's become a character of the band.
Yeah.
Being, it's dense and complex, but it's, we don't find it to be overly, so we like it. It's sort of, we just keep pushing at each other to see if we can entertain ourselves even more.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah. Don't fight it.
Thank you.
Let it be as rich as it can be. Let's hear another song.
Okay,
from
great.
The Ghost of a Saber-Toothed Tiger. Schrodinger's Cat is the title of this piece. That's a creature we hear a lot about, but even though I've read about this whole sort of physics, mathematics conundrum of Schrodinger's cat, I've never understood it. Is it something you understand?
Well, Schrodinger actually, sorry, pardon my accordion, by the way. It has Tourette's. Schrodinger actually created the theory of Schrodinger's cat to sort of mock it, to spoof it, much like the term Big Bang was coined, actually. But the fact that you could put a cat in a box and shoot it, and it was neither dead or alive until you observed it or looked at it, which was explaining quantum particle reality, which at that time was sort of a valid theory, which has been disproved since. But he created the theory to sort of make fun of it, but it sort of stuck with his name, and he gets all the credit for that theory.
And having said that, I don't think we fully understand quantum mechanics, if that's your question. We don't. But I mean,
I'm not going to explain any further.
We definitely like to read about, you know, things and
but we like the metaphors of science. Scientific metaphors can also be sort of romantic in the right context. Or
I mean, essentially, this song speaks a lot about a lot of different very intelligent people and accomplishments of society, but kind of makes fun of them and shows how sometimes all the smarts in the world can, you know, not get you out of the basic needs of being a human or something. I don't know if that explains it.
I don't know if that's what it's about.
Well, you know what I mean. Well,
we have no idea what it's about.
We have no idea what it's about.
Well, that's what songs are like. I mean, it's actually kind of an interesting thing about the co-songwriting. Any songwriter is working with an element of mystery, aspects to the song that they're creating that even they don't entirely understand. That's sort of the nature of poetry as well as songwriting. And when you double that, then you are ratcheting that up. The interpretive aspects of it.
Yeah, it's good to leave room for interpretation.
Yeah.
I think if you have too much of an agenda or a message in your art, you leave no room for the observer or the audience to sort of connect with it and imbue themselves into it while experiencing it. I like to read into art that sort of is open-ended.
Yeah, and a lot of great writers, like I remember Dylan in that documentary being asked by some journalist, you know, what is the meaning of blowing in the wind? And he was like, I don't know what it means. How am I supposed to know what it means if you don't know what it means? Like, yes. You tell me what it means. And I think there's something smart about not overanalyzing your own art, just because, you know,
silly.
The fun of it is, yeah, kind of just that we liked it the way it sounded, and, you know, it depends on how the viewer or listener experiences it. That's basically it.
Sure. Schrodinger's Cat, performed here in the WNYC studio by the ghost of a saber-toothed tiger.
One, two, three, and...
is a Pandora's box, and truth is just a paradox. Like promising to never lie, let sleeping dogs and lovers lie. You say your love is immortal, like the blood of a sea turtle. Wasn't dear Dorian Gray, lone as an asteroid in space. The clock puts its hands around the hourglass waves, like a tree that falls alone in the woods without a sound. I can't be sure that I exist when you are not. To Aristotle, man's greatest thoughts and deeds, mere love notes in cheap beer bottles floating out to sea. We placed our bets about his fate, standing over Schrodinger's grave. Pavlov's dog chased the cat, his heart bled like a red Rorschach. The clock puts its hands around hourglass waves, like a tree that falls alone in the woods without a sound. I can't be sure that I exist when you are not around. Without a sound, I can't be sure that I exist when you are not around. Like a tree that falls alone in the woods without a sound, I can't be sure that I exist when you are not around.
Playing multiple instruments, sometimes simultaneously. That's Sean Lennon singing, playing the guitar, and he's got a little tambourine that he's playing with his foot, and a cymbal that he hits with one hand when it's not strumming the guitar. Charlotte Kemp Mule is singing and playing a melodica and a glockenspiel. All set up here to bring us these songs and more. We just heard Schrodinger's Cat. That will be included on an album that comes out when? The end of October?
October 28th?
26th.
Or the 26th?
26th.
Within those 2 days, mm-hmm. It's coming out on Chimera Music.
Unless it's fashionably late.
Exactly.
Yeah, Chimera Music is a label that the two of you have started together for releasing your own and friends' material. Is that right?
Yeah, we started the label with a friend of ours, Yuka Honda, who I was in a band with called Chibo Mato for about 4 or 5 years. And our first release was a record with my mom. We sort of revived the Plastic Ono Band, Yoko Ono Plastic Ono Band name, and put out a record called Between My Head and the Sky. Then the second release was called Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Undead. That was a film score that I did. And now we're getting ready to do the Ghost Acoustic Sessions in October. And then we'll be following that up, I think, with a second electric record in maybe January or February.
Of this band?
Yeah, a ghost record.
A whole other group of songs? Or
Electrified.
Yeah, it's a new group of songs, and it's sort of a more orchestrated album, if that's possible.
The acoustic album is gently orchestrated in a manner much like what you're doing here in the studio.
Well, we tried to do something that was really stripped down. A lot of the vocals were live as they are now with, you know, the guitar and vocal performed at the same time into the same mics. And we wanted to do that in order to represent the way we started, because when she and I started the band, it was kind of just on a whim, and I had found this play that was called The Ghost of a Saber-Toothed Tiger that she had written when she was very young. Uh-huh. And it was such a cool title. I was like, hey, babe, can we start a band?
So embarrassing. Because of this.
It's really not, actually, because it's very
that
cool.
That would stick.
And, what did you say, Charlotte?
Oh, I never knew that would actually stick.
Uh-huh. but so it was the name that spawned the band and not the other way around, which usually happens.
Yeah, it sort of started as a joke. Well, back then we had band name Tourette's. We thought everything was a good band name. If someone said something absurd or preposterous, we'd be like, oh, that's a great band name.
Well, I think we still have that Tourette's. But in those days we were an acoustic duo. So even though we had already evolved into playing live electrically, we just felt that we wanted to do a record that was a sort of photograph to document the way that we actually started, which was, you know, just playing guitars and singing in our room.
Yeah. Charlotte, what is your musical background? I understand you've been a fashion model. You were a Maybelline girl, and you've been on magazine covers and stuff, and that's a profession that doesn't make a sound.
Well, you know, they're always blasting horrible music in the studio, but yes, it is a silent film of sorts.
So when did the music come in?
You're very musical. Well, thank you. I've been playing music, been playing around with my mom's sort of very out-of-tune piano since I was a little kid. But I never got lessons, unfortunately. And I had a guitar that my dad, he bought me a Martin when I was like 12. And I wrote some folk songs with my girlfriend and around our neighborhood lake. And the geese would sort of gather around. We performed for them.
Where was that?
That was in Atlanta, Georgia. But since then, I sort of, you know, forgot it with all my other childhood toys and dreams and moved to New York to do the modeling thing, you know, which sort of didn't leave much room for pursuing a talent, unfortunately.
She was very coy about being a musician, and we had already been dating for some time before she played me her first song. And I was really surprised because most people don't keep it a secret when they have talents. Mm-hmm. And you're the only person I know like that.
How do you feel about it now? Is music becoming your main thing?
Yeah, well, I never expected to be, but it's so much fun. I just want to be with Sean all the time and vice versa. So we're just sort of, it's sort of an extension of our relationship. And, you know, I always was more of a lyricist than like a singer or a musician. So that part I'm having to like learn and catch up with very quickly.
She's only been playing accordion for about a week and a half or 2 weeks. So it's kind of unfair, but she's had to learn how to play all these instruments just to be in our band, but I don't know.
It's hard to keep up with Sean because he plays everything so well and we're both very competitive. So it's like, oh, I must learn. I must catch up.
I think she's compensating by having 40 instruments over there.
Sean, on your website, you have a recording of a concert you did at the Stone a few years ago in which you're principally the drummer.
Yeah.
Is that the instrument you feel most comfortable on, or is the guitar?
Honestly, I feel equally comfortable on...
You have the most fun on drums. I see it in your face.
Right, I have the most fun on drums. That's true. But in terms of comfort, I do feel equally comfortable on guitar, piano, bass, and drums. And I think that's because I don't play any of them great. I never really focused on becoming an instrumentalist. They were always just tools for recording for me.
Yeah, and for composition.
And for composing. So, I know there are great players in the world, and, you know, I never tried to be one of them. I was always just sort of interested in sounds. So, you know, I have a big collection of synthesizers and weird ethnic instruments. I have tamboras and, you know, sitars and stuff, and stuff I've been collecting since I was young. I mean, whenever I wanted to buy anything, it would always be an instrument, even when I was 12. And so I think that's why I play everything, but it's, you know, jack of all trades, master of none kind of scenario.
Yeah. Well, you sound really good today, and I thank you for bringing this project into the Spinning On Air studio here at WNYC. I'm David Garland with Sean Lennon and Charlotte Kemp-Moole. And they're giving us some of the songs that they've created as the ghost of a saber-toothed tiger. And listening to your album, I realized, you know, there is a dividing line among songwriters and people who make music. It's not a question of this being good or bad, but I think a dividing line is the diminished chord.
That's interesting.
Do you know that's the first chord that we fell in love over? Because really? I thought I had discovered it. I thought
oh, really?
I invented
yes.
it on my guitar because, you know, I didn't have any, you know, teaching. So I was basically figuring out chords for myself on the guitar and the uh-huh. inversions. And I discovered a diminished chord right around the time I was 17 and I had met him. And, like, he came over to my apartment a year later or whatever and I was showing it to him. I was like, yeah. And he was like, that's a diminished chord. You like that? I was like, yeah, this is my favorite chord. Uh-huh. And he was like, me too. I was like, no way. And that's so funny you mention it.
Because there are people who will use that chord and people to whom it never occurs to use that chord, I think.
Well, it's also the suspense chord. It's the cinematic suspense chord.
It's a little antiquated, but in the old days it was fairly common, wasn't it? I mean, in silent films and stuff. I always associated it with Charlie Chaplin or something. But it is,
Nina Rota,
I think it's a dividing line for I don't know how chromatic you want to go with your voice leading, and I think once you get into that kind of diminished chord, then it's too late, and there's no going back because after that
it's harder to make sound good, definitely, though, because it's dissonance, you know. So it's but we like dissonance, but you know.
Sean, could you just play a diminished chord so that the listener hears?
This is an E diminished. And the thing that's beautiful to me about diminished chords is that you can describe all the notes, all the 12 notes in the 12-tone scale with just three of them. So this is all inversions of a E diminished.
I really fan it out though.
G diminished. And then there's only three diminished chords. There's only three full diminished chords in the 12-tone scale. And when you get to the fourth one, you're actually doing an inversion of the first. So if you start on C diminished, and then you go up to C sharp diminished, then you go up to D diminished, that's the third one. And then once you get to E flat or D sharp,
it's
the second inversion of C diminished. So that's what I love about it. In fact, like steel drums are laid out that way.
There are just
three diminished scales. And it's kind of that's what's so beautiful about that chord to me, that you can actually describe all the notes.
Yeah, it sort of ties together
with only three of them. So it's a good transitional chord. But after that, we got into the half diminished, which is more like a minor six. And now
minor six is my favorite chord.
Sort of preoccupied.
Play minor six.
We've moved on from diminished, and now we use this chord a lot, which is like a diminished. If there's one note, this is a diminished, and this sharping. Uh-huh.
We'll play a flat 5 major 7.
A flat five major seven. All right.
If you like dissonance.
Hold on. She's demanding this weird chord.
Oh, that one. That one I love.
That's a G flat 5 major 7. That's her new chord. Now, see, that's what I mean. It's too late. Once you've crossed the threshold, there's no going back.
Once you welcome dissonance into your life.
And then you're just sort of harmonically.
You can never be, you know, pleased by a triad anymore. It's like kinky sex. Once you pass that line, you can never go back. You desensitized to triad chords.
I still like triads sometimes, secretly. When she's not looking, I'll go in the closet and play Ramones songs.
No!
Anyway, speaking of which, this song is not rife with diminished chords. Actually, it is. But our most diminished song is probably Dark Matter, I noticed. Oh, and Richard Brown, too. But I think our next group of songs will be less diminished. Hopefully.
All right. But because it plays an important role in the next song, which is Rainbows and Gasoline.
That's true. And good ears for saying that. It is funny that you mentioned the diminished chord.
I know.
My dad actually rarely used diminished chords. He would make dominant seven sound like diminished chords. So.
He loved dominant sevens. He was a dominant seven kind of dude.
Yeah.
That's more rock.
Yeah.
All right, here's Rainbows and Gasoline. You ready?
We're doing this.
1, 2, 3, 4. Rainbows and gasoline, golden and green, chemical sunsetting.
like 100 million chameleon clouds. We are the dinosaurs now, wearing Freudian slips like evening gowns, taking guilt trips from town to town, dressed for excess, wearing cheaper suits, walking around in another man's shoes. Oh, why do we give memories eyes and teeth, like taxidermy dreams, bury them in gardens under the weeds. Let the willows weave, wearing Freudian slips like evening gowns, taking guilt trips from town to town, dressed for excess, wearing cheaper suits, walking around.
Rainbows and Gasoline, performed by the Ghost of a Saber-Toothed Tiger, performing here in the WNYC studio here on Spinning on Air. I'm David Garland. We spoke with Charlotte Kemp Moule about her musical background. And Sean Lennon, I'd like to speak to you about your musical background. Mm-hmm. You come from a family that has been involved with music in a little way, in a way that has made a difference in our culture and our world. Your father, John Lennon, as a member of the Beatles and with his own projects, and your mother, Yoko Ono. And now you are a musician. You have been for some time. Was there ever a time when you wanted not to be a musician?
Actually, I can honestly say there hasn't ever been a time, because I was just writing about this last night. It's funny. I had a deadline for the 70th John Lennon anniversary concert brochure. I had to write a little 600-word piece about my father, and it's for the BBC Proms performance they're doing in October. And I was thinking about it, and, you know, a lot of people who don't know me assume that I'm playing music for ulterior motives, to either get attention or maybe to try to be like him because of some sort of insecurity. And actually, the real truth is that when my dad passed away, I really felt as if the only way to replace him was through music. And it never has really succeeded, obviously, fully, but it was my way of sort of feeling as if he was with me. And I remember when I was around six, picking out songs like Yellow Submarine and, you know, Imagine, the simple ones. And I would pick them out on the piano at my house. And that was the first time I actually felt kind of almost like I was with him physically again. And it was that feeling that that has driven me to play music ever since. And so no, I never really looked back. I never, by the time I could think about what choices I would make in terms of a career, I had already been playing music so long that, you know, that was all I knew how to do.
Did your father try to guide you in music in any way? Do you remember?
Well,
you
he passed away when I was five. So, yeah. I have vague memories of some guitar sessions, I guess you could call them, which were, you know, essentially me beating the guitar as a baby would beat a teddy bear or something. There was no musical connection. In fact, I don't remember being musical at all until after he passed away. And I remember distinctly, you know, associating him and music, since everyone in the world who spoke to me always spoke about him and spoke about music before I even had a clear picture of what the world was, you know. So to me, music and my dad were so connected, and I knew the pianos were his, and it was just a way of me sort of finding a relationship with him, essentially.
Yeah.
I think his mom influences him a lot.
Yeah. My mother actually was the person who primarily taught me music, if anyone did. I mean, I never had formal teaching, but I grew up in the studio. My first memories are actually them making Double Fantasy, and then my mother made a record called Season of Glass after my dad passed away, and that's really one of my earliest memories. So my whole understanding of the way studios work, compressors and all that jazz, comes from my mother. And then her songwriting has really influenced me a lot too, especially her experimental side. And you know, that's, I think that's why I work well with her. And we did Between My Head and the Sky, that record I mentioned earlier, which came out like last year or something. I think we worked together well because she was sort of my mentor, and so I really understand where she's coming from. But I really love avant-garde and what you call noise music, I guess.
I don't call it that.
Or not okay. You, I mean one. What one calls noise music. I have a side project with a guy named Greg Saunier from Deerhoof. He's a drummer from Deerhoof. And we kind of have...
Consortium Musicum.
The Consortium Musicum. And we kind of do a more improvised kind of... towards the world of noise, I guess. But to me, it's all just genres are so, you know, passe to me, and I don't even really try to think of, I mean, to me the most boring thing is players who are like, in order to play jazz you have to have this kind of guitar and this kind of amp and play this kind of scale, or in order to play rock it has to be this kind of, I mean, it's just...
Well, what I like about the album you just did with Greg is that you completely forget things like what a diminished chord is, and you're literally just coaxing sounds and textures out of miscellaneous objects laying around.
Which is, sounds like...
this isn't every day for you.
Excuse me, but what album is that?
It's called Consortium Musicum, and I think...
They just recorded it. It's really cool.
We haven't mastered it yet. It's going to come out in Chimera Music. It's called Supernormal Stimuli, and it's just a duet improvisation band between Greg and I.
Greg is the drummer of Deerhoof.
Yeah, but he plays a lot.
He went to school for composition, which surprised me. He really is musical. Like, and drummers always get a rap for, oh, they're not musicians. Drummers aren't musicians, but he's so musical.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Anyway, so I what I'm trying to say is that I am proud of being influenced by my father especially, and that was certainly the first music I played, my father and my mother's. But, you know, I also am a huge fan of lots of other music, from Steve Reich to, you know, to Duran Duran. So I think I have a lot of influence. Yeah, definitely. Duran Duran.
He's full of references. I grew up so sheltered. Uh-huh. I don't know half the current bands anyway.
Well, you're especially unhip. I mean, her mother was actually a piano teacher in Georgia.
She was not a piano teacher.
She played piano when she
had some wine. She would play some piano.
But my point is that she really believed in educating you and educating Charlotte in a way that she, you know, she grew
sheltered
up with
me
with
from
classical music,
the hippity hop.
And she certainly she wasn't exposed. You know, blindly to just any pop culture. So it's actually amazing how how young she is and yet how little she knows about mainstream pop culture. And it's kind of cool, refreshing, actually.
I'm speaking with Sean Lennon and Charlotte Kemp Moole, who are performing their material that they've created together, composed and created the lyrics together, right? Bouncing off one another with all these ideas and arranged them together. Is that true?
We're still currently arranging them in the studio, as you've probably noticed.
Even right now.
Well, what's amazing is that, I think I said this, but when I met her, she first didn't even tell me that she was a songwriter. And then, you know, after she did, I kind of just went over a few couple of things that I'd picked up on, you know, in playing music, you know, which is something you mentioned, like this is a diminished chord, this is a flat six, or this is a flat 13, and this is what people mean when this happens. And within a couple of years after that, I don't know how to explain it, but she's definitely kind of, in a way, and I'll be honest, you've kind of surpassed me in terms of your hearing and your understanding of harmony. She has a very, very... She really can hear complex harmony, and I've never seen anything like it. I don't know. So, I mean, that's really the core of why we write so many songs, is because it's just fun to work with somebody who kind of pushes your ears a lot.
Mm. Well, I think if you had been a carpenter, I would have pursued woodwork with equal zealotry. Is that a word?
How about, what is it, equal viv? Is that a word?
Vermin. Equal vermin.
Is the technical term.
Let's have another song from The Ghost of a Saber-Toothed Tiger.
What song is this going to be?
Dark Matter.
White Noise. Okay. Cool. Oh, I should let you. You have such a great radio voice. I like when you say our names in the songs.
Then I'll say it. This is Dark Matter and White Noise.
One, two, three.
Breakfast at the Adlon. My rabbit felt hat on.
Papers filled with clones and bombings.
Ugly origami.
DNA is our ragdoll. Mammoths and Neanderthals.
On welfare and Adderall.
Plutonium at the shopping mall.
Now the bees speak Chinese and of American cheese. Wake me in a thousand years when computers can shed tears. Do I have to die before I see the pigs fly and the ladies sing? Water's more precious than gold. Even jokes never get old.
There's no need to fear love lines.
Latex skin cannot feel time.
Vending machines for memories. Bubble gum and tabloid dreams.
Dark matter and white noise seem
like ebony and ivory.
After all the entropy, me in a thousand years pigs fly and the fat ladies sing. Arms and legs in thrift stores, celebrity sweat sold to the poor.
Choose more than your baby's name.
Liz Taylor's eyes and Hawking's brain.
If you've forgotten how to feel for DTV, can make it real.
Dark matter and white noise scene.
Like ebony and ivory.
After all the entropy, we look like black and white movies. Wake me in a thousand years, when computers can shed tears. Do I have to die before I see the pigs fly and the fat ladies sing?
That's Dark Matter and White Noise, performed in the WNYC studio here on Spinning on Air by the Ghost of a Saber-Toothed Tiger. Name of the band came, as was explained earlier, from a play that you wrote when you were little, Charlotte. Was writing plays something you did much of?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
I was a real dork. I wrote a lot of plays to pass the time.
Did they get performed?
Actually, yes. Yes, in my schools, yes. A little bit, yeah. And some of my family members. Sometimes I'd make my cats perform the plays.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And what was The Ghost of a Saber-Toothed Tiger about?
Well, I was 7 years old, and you know, I had a fantasy of this kid going to a museum and like getting lost and wandering into a dark room and finding like an old taxidermied saber-toothed tiger in like the back of the Natural History Museum, but then suddenly like it came alive and like it was like haunted, and that's why they kept it in the back room, and the kid like released it, and like this invisible ghost of a saber-toothed tiger like sprung out of the taxidermied one and like ran around the city causing rampage, and this detective had to come and shoot it with a tranquilizer, but they had to tie all these bells in the bushes because it was invisible, so they had to like be able to hear it instead of see it. Yeah.
Wow.
I can't believe I still remember it.
Yeah, when you really filled it out there.
It's really silly.
She also like wrote it, do you not want me to say? She wrote a novel when she was only a few years older, and it's like 700 pages.
Only 11. A few years older?
Yeah. When I was 11.
Yeah.
700 pages?
Yeah, it's a real like... It's
called
real...
Quaternion Elements. Okay. It's really silly too.
She was kind of a prodigal writer.
Wow.
Well, it's pretty intense. I actually read it. It's a sci-fi. I mean, I didn't read the whole thing, but I read bits of it.
It's kind of like Dune.
It's really sophisticated and lengthy.
Wow.
I probably didn't know half the book.
Had a bit of science fiction going on there in the song you just sang.
Yeah, we love science fiction.
A lot of our songs deal with a sort of imaginary future, a surrealist future, but that also sort of reflects the moment. But it's weird because I think a lot of times we say, like, can we write another song like this?
Another post-apocalyptic song.
Okay. And then we always find it kind of a fascinating subject because, we can't stop thinking about that kind of thing, about how strange things are and how, I guess, beautiful they are too. So, I mean, it's a pretty strange world we live in.
It is.
So I think our music just reflects how strange things really are. If it sounds strange to you, it's because you're strange.
Let's hear another song, Lavender Road.
All righty.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
Where does the time go? Down Lavender Road. Turn left at the post where memories grow like weeds in summer snow. And firefly galaxies glow. Here we go, pulling up the curtains on the magic show. Heroes and ghosts sit in the front row. Curios, ballerina bones and tightrope vertigo. Opera glasses, light telescopes. Where does young love go? Planets know how there is no hope when that red wind blows and all our words go up in smoke. Here we go, pulling up the curtains on the magic show. Heroes and Curios, ballerina bones and tightrope vertigo. Opera glasses, light drops flow and rows of graveyards grow like white rabbit holes, and where they stop nobody knows. Here we go, pulling up the curtains on the magic show.
Lavender Road, performed by the Ghost of a Saber-Toothed Tiger, which is just two people, despite all the instruments you heard in use there. Charlotte Kemp Mool is singing and playing some percussion and the melodica there and the glockenspiel. And Sean Lennon is singing and playing the guitar. And the cymbal with his right hand sometimes, and he's using sort of a drummer's hi-hat setup with a tambourine.
Yeah, I've always wanted to be like, is it Dick Van Dyke?
Yes.
In a Mary Poppins when he does the one man band. And is that Mary Poppins? Yes, it is.
Yeah, I think so.
And that was always my fantasy. Classic. And now I'm finally realizing it. And I'm realizing as well how difficult it is.
That's good. We need tentacles.
This is Spinning on Air. I'm David Garland in the WNYC studio with the ghost of a saber-toothed tiger, Sean Lennon and Charlotte Kemp Moole. And you're going to play a song called Richard Brown. Who is Richard Brown? Is he entirely an invention or a real person?
Well,
a composite, maybe.
I don't know if I should say.
Okay. I guess he's real then.
I've been advised to sort of keep my lips shut. But let's just say it's inspired from a very classic New York type character, movie producer, quote unquote.
Sean, you're going to play piano on this.
Yeah, and it's actually the first time I'll be playing and singing this piece ever. So I learned it last night and recorded it.
At 4 in the morning.
So let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Down that cherry tree.
Richard Brown, a brand new song by Sean Lennon and Charlotte Kemp Moole, who together are the ghost of a saber-toothed tiger. And that song, like all the others you've offered us today, is full of pictures. Lots of imagery in your songs. lots of things going on in my imagination, stimulated by
those words. We actually were kind of considering that for this never realized musical idea we wanted to do. I mean, we've always sort of had ambitions to maybe one day do like a musical film or a musical
thing.
Yeah, to
write a musical and about that song, New York characters. And
yeah, mm-hmm. And so that song is definitely sort of the only one we have for the musical, but we've decided to record it and put it out on our next record anyway because we like playing it a lot. But it's definitely stylistically more like Gilbert and Sullivan or something than the rest of our,
you know. Gilbert and Sullivan in the lounge.
Our repertoire, yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's kind of more like a theatrical, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, many of these songs could go that direction. Cool. So we can look forward to images from you, maybe, in addition to the ones that you stimulate in our imaginations. There was some sort of movie, Sean, that was connected with your most recent album from a few years ago, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, Friendly Fire, the album was a film as well that I sort of made with some friends of mine. And that was my idea at the time. I thought it was really cool was to accompany every song with visuals and not just have it be 10 music videos, but have it be kind of one
narrative
long film.
Art.
Kind of like, I guess, people have done, like Pink Floyd did with The Wall. But I thought that it was going to be a great idea. And I think the only thing that I regret about it is that I think most people didn't realize that the film was in the record. A lot of people I know who are even fans of the record didn't know that there was a movie in the box until I told them. So, you know, I spend a lot of time working on that film, but, you know, we have ambitions to be filmmakers on some level. We like the idea of maybe doing film for our ghost stuff. But, you know, it's sad. I mean, there's no MTV anymore, so there's no real place where people watch music videos, but I guess it's all YouTube now. But the industry of music videos has changed. But so we'd like to be our own video makers, since, you know, there's no industry for hiring people anymore.
Originally I wanted to make movies before I met Sean, and so I think our songs tend to be like, they want to be movies in a way,
kind
like,
of, yeah.
They're, you know, they're very sort of visual and, you know, have a narrative arc in a weird way, but I think ultimately we would like to make movies and just do the soundtrack for them.
Good. Well, keep us up to date on what you're doing. And people can learn more at chimeramusic.com. Mm-hmm. People can also learn more at seanonolennon.com. Charlotte and Sean, thank you so much for bringing these lovely and fanciful and ornate and moving songs to share with us.
Thank you for having us. It's been really exciting to be on WNYC. We're big fans.
Yeah.
Great. I'm David Garland. This is Spinning on Air. George Wellington has been our recording engineer, assisted by Chase Colpon. And thanks for listening.
Thank you.